Thanks for listening to the Doug Gottlieb Show podcast. Be sure to catch us live every weekday, 3 to 6 Eastern, 12 to 3 Pacific on Fox Sports Radio. Find your local station for the Doug Gottlieb Show at foxsportsradio.com or stream us live every day on the iHeartRadio app by searching FSR.
Now let's get this party started.
You're listening to Fox Sports Radio.
Doug Gottlieb Show, Fox Sports Radio. Quick shout out to my new coffee of choice. Ramos, I know you know I love coffee.
I see you drink quite a lot of it, yes. Is this hot coffee you're drinking right now?
No, this is iced.
Okay.
It was iced. Phil's coffee. You've heard of it?
I have not.
Every cup is handmade and handcrafted. And I had people trying to use dry fills. Like, I don't want to wait. I'm not a waiter guy, you know? But now because of COVID, you know, you have the app, you press it, it's ready for you. It's great. Oh, really? I'm a fan.
Is there one close by to the studios here at Fox Sports Radio?
Okay. Yes, there is. It's about a 5-minute drive.
That's not bad.
It's not bad. It is a chain. It is a growing West Coast chain. And is, we need to get sales on that one.
Candace, if you're listening.
All right, so we got a lot to get to here, a metric ton to get to. Let's start with this. Last night, the Dodgers dominated the Tampa Bay Rays, and I told you that I was personally cheering for Clayton Kershaw. And, like, look, I'm not trying to be one of these guys that is in denial of what Kershaw had failed to do previously. Like, Kershaw has not been, give me the ball, I'm going to give you 9. I'm going to have a complete game and just wipe out. He's not Black Jack McDowell, right? That's not who he is. Last night, Clayton Kershaw, 6 innings pitched, 1 earned run. He had 8 strikeouts. There was nothing fluky about it. The only earned run was a solo home run. You know, he was a little tight to start, but look, it's the World Series, and we know what he's up against. He gets out of it. It goes downhill. Look, we've seen this 2017 against the Astros, game 1, 7 innings pitch, 1 earned run. 2018 NLCS, game 7 against the Brewers, 9th inning, he came in, he struck out 2, no hits. Matter of fact, in Clayton Kershaw's playoff career, he has 13 starts where he's given up 2 or fewer runs. He only has 6 starts when he's given up 5 or more runs, and every time it's been after the 5th inning. He's tired. He's fatigued. And not all the runs are truly his, right? Reliever comes in, inherits the run, blows up, the guys on base, you know, end up going to the credit of Clayton Kershaw. So I'm not going to sit here and try and tell you Kershaw's been a great postseason player the way that Smoltz has or Madison Bumgarner has or Curt Schilling has. Right? Like, I'm not going to lie to you that way. But I will tell you that, look, there's no more pressure than pitching in the World Series. And as a starter, game 1, 2017, he was money. 2020, he's been money. He's had some high-pressure situations like Game 4 of the NLDS against the Mets where he gave up just 1 earned run over 7 innings. He's shown us the ability to pitch in pressure-packed situations, and yeah, he hears you. It's not great. It's not fun, but that doesn't mean that he's not a... That's like Cody Bellinger. We do this limited sample size thing all the time, right? Where Cody Bellinger, if you ask somebody right now, did Cody Bellinger have a good year? You'd be like, hell yeah. See the home run he hit in 7? See the home run he hit in game 1? He had a great year. Ramos, you watch every Dodger game, literally every Dodger game. What kind of year did Cody Bellinger have?
Not a defending National League MVP year, I can tell you that.
Right. Felt like he was a flash in the pan from last year, right?
That is correct.
Felt like people adjusted to him. No, it was only 60 games. It was shortened, you know, and the lineup changed. Everything changed. Especially when you add Mookie to the lineup, right? Chris Taylor had been their leadoff hitter before. Now Mookie's their leadoff hitter. So, like, things have changed. They developed greater depth. Corey Seager's totally back now from Tommy John of 2 years ago, and he's probably their second best player to Mookie, and maybe even their best player. But Corey Seager's a big-time player. They got dudes now. My point is, we have a tendency to make these bold statements based upon what somebody does in the height of and the hype of the playoffs, and that's not always who they are, even in the playoffs, even in pressure-packed situations. I don't think the pressure got to Kershaw previously. I think fatigue got to him. And that's my story, and I'm sticking to it, because I think if pressure got to him, then pressure would have gotten to him last night and would have gotten to him in 2017 game one and would have gotten to him, you know, when he pitched against the Mets in game five of the DS. Like, it didn't get to him then. So I don't think he's been nearly, and every stat would tell you, nearly as good as the dominant regular season pitcher that over the last decade, he's widely be considered the best National League pitcher, maybe the best pitcher in baseball over that entire span. Has he been that good in the playoffs? No. But last night was a huge step in shutting everybody up. Like, look, I don't even have my best stuff anymore. I don't throw mid to upper 90s. But I'm a pitcher, not a thrower, and I can still find ways to make your head spin and make your bat miss my ball. He's more like Clayton Manning. Right? That's who I've considered. He's like Clayton Manning. When he wins a title, you'd be like, you know, Peyton Manning wasn't as good in the big games, in the clutch, maybe as some of the other quarterbacks. But he was a great quarterback. And some of that is also the makeup of his team. That his team is so widely dependent upon him. Same thing with Clayton Kershaw. All these teams have been dependent upon him to win them the big game. You can't get another arm? Like, I got to be the arm to save the day every single time? That's how Peyton Manning was. Until his last year, where he wasn't very good and the Broncos carried him. This year, I think, is kind of a mix where he is good, not the greatest pitcher in baseball, but the team is very good and they can carry him, but he can also shut people down by being a starting pitcher. I don't think he was truly a choker before, but there wasn't enough big-time, big-game postseason success to go like, yeah, those are the exception, this is the norm. But now the more data you acquire, and especially as well as he pitched last night, it does feel a little bit more like it's the norm. All right, coming up next here on the Doug Gottlieb Show on Fox Sports Radio. You know, it's interesting. I think I know what has to happen with Baker Mayfield in order for the Browns to be successful. I'll share that with you upcoming next.
Be sure to catch the live edition of the Doug Gottlieb Show weekdays at 3 p.m. Eastern, noon Pacific on Fox Sports Radio and the iHeartRadio app.
Here's the thing. I have friends that say, look, if you look at the meltdowns on social media, a good portion of them are women. Because social media, especially Twitter, is straight up evil in terms of what people say, because they're just like, I can just say whatever. I can just say whatever. What's always amazed me about these a-holes on social media, or the slide into your Instagram, is like, how whatever level of offense they take to what you say, there's nothing stopping them from saying anything that they want to say. Right? Like, they'll just make the most vile comments that are clearly and quite obviously offensive. But it's in their defensive is that, well, I was offended by what you said, so I can say something that is highly and way more offensive. Like, yeah, that's not actually how it works, you know? And I think there's an amount of empathy that most women have, that guys have empathy, but they're not as empathetic. And I also think that women take things to heart. The mean things you say, it's like, you know, when guys talk trash, they talk trash. And not every girl is against talking trash. Like, you know, I have a daughter who she can hang. She'll talk trash with the rest of us. But I have another daughter who you say something to her and she takes it as a personal offense and, you know, I look at social media and Baker Mayfield's wife is quoted as saying that she was very close to losing it over people and the things that they've said over social media. Baker has said this in the criticism he's taken in the national media. I don't give a damn what they say. Bakerfield said after loss, 4-2 never felt so much like 0-6, but his confidence hasn't taken a hit. This was Kevin Stefanski on Baker's comments.
Specifically to what Baker was referring, maybe felt the mood on the Zoom call, maybe. But I can promise you in here, we're ready to go. We're ready to put the work in to try and go 1-0. And I think it was Parcells who said, you are what your record says you are.
Correct. Look, I said this about, I mean, even if Odell Beckham Jr. was frustrated with Baker, and that's why he took off his shoes and his helmet. Like, look, dude, we're 4-2. Put your helmet and shoes back on. Go to the locker room. Get in the plane. Let's fly home. Let's watch some film. Let's figure it out. Let's fix things. I am both I'm a realist and a fan of Baker Mayfield. I'm realistic in that. I just don't think he has. Everybody talks about intangibles. He's got intangibles. His issue has been the tangibles and the understanding of what those tangibles are. He's just not a big guy, not an athletic guy. He's got a good arm, but it's not like he's got Matt Stafford or Aaron Rodgers or Pat Mahomes' arm. He's a good enough athlete for a regular human being, but it's not like he's a freak like Russell Wilson, Lamar Jackson, and some of those guys. He's just not. Josh Allen. Josh Allen's a freak. Throws it 80-something yards, can run, is big, is strong. He's none of those things. He has quality intangibles. But those intangibles sometimes can get marginalized if you have too much pride, if you take people's if you take people's negative comments to heart. You just can't. You're not. The only thing that wins people is winning games. And even that's not going to win some people. So my advice to Baker would be to not only stay off social media, but keep your wife off social media. People are evil. What is the win in going on there? What is it? What is the win? You know? But I got people chasing something I did 25 years ago that I could not possibly care any less about. Doesn't affect my daily life at all. Nobody's life's affected, especially the idiots who troll me on Twitter. But I understand you read it and you think, like, hey, I was popular 5 minutes ago and now I'm not. None you can control.
Be sure to catch the live edition of the Doug Gottlieb Show weekdays at 3 p.m. Eastern, noon Pacific.
That's crazy with Pat Chambers, because he had kind of survived the past 2 years when people thought he was going to be fired like a year and a half ago, and they made a...
They were good last year.
Last year they were good, even though they it was... I think it was Rajai Bolton or... Rasir Bolton, who left and went to Iowa State and made some accusations about the program that were not flattering. And obviously, my guess would be that there's some sort of either proof or some sort of smoking gun that led to Pat Chambers' ouster. You don't resign on October 21st when the season's going to start in 1 month unless some sort of investigation came down.
I'll have some news in the press as well about how the Big West is handling their basketball schedule, which is somewhat unique, but what we're going to have in this COVID day and age of college hoops.
Do you mind if we talk about it right now as we're waiting for Brady Quinn?
Sure. Yeah.
Okay, so the Big West is going to play 20 league games. For people who don't know what the Big West is, mostly California schools with the exception of Hawaii. So what are they going to do with Hawaii?
Not necessarily sure yet, but I don't know if they would just... fly over.
I think they'll just fly over and play a bunch of games.
Yeah,
I'll have to. I can text their coach. He's a friend of mine. Basically, all they're doing is conference games.
All they're doing is conference games, and the conference games would be held on a Friday and Saturday. You'd basically be playing the same opponent on back-to-back days, is my understanding. So you would have a game on Friday. For example, let's just take CSUN against Long Beach State. They would play on Friday. They would play on Saturday in the same gym that they played both days. And that would be their, I guess, two matchups that they would have for the season.
Hmm. What do you think?
That's how you got to do it. That's how you get through it. And, you know, for a conference like that, I mean, if you can't have fans, I don't know, you know, how much, I'm not privy on how much TV money, but it's going to be a one bid, you know, league anyway. You got to do it. I've always thought that the Pac-12 scheduling, the way that they've done it because of how the schools are set up, was always a very unique.
Yeah, so for people who don't know the Pac-12, they do what's called travel partners. So USC and UCLA, Oregon, Oregon State, Stanford, Cal, Utah, Colorado are the only ones that are like, you know, far away from each other. Washington State's pretty far away from each other. And that's actually a really tough trip, as is Colorado, Utah, because when you go to play Oregon State, everybody stays at the Valley River Inn, both teams. And oftentimes they used to, because they used to always play Thursday and Saturday, the teams used to fly up together, right? They'd go and they get to L.A. and they fly in like a Southwest flight to Eugene, and they'd stay in Eugene at the Valley River Inn, and one would play Oregon, and 45 minutes away is Oregon State, and then they both stay there, right? And then after Saturday night's game, they both fly back. And they actually, there's teams that have chartered together to do that. Now it's a little different because now some teams play on a Wednesday, some play on a Thursday, some are Saturday, some are Sunday. But you do your travel partner, and it generally works. And when they were going to expand the league, a long time ago, there was hope that it would be San Diego State and UNLV as travel partners. That didn't work. Or maybe a BYU and a Utah would have been better than Colorado and BYU, but they didn't want a religious school in the mix with the public or the private schools. Anyway. But how's the Pac-12 doing it this year with scheduling? We don't know yet, right?
Yeah, if they did, it's just not on the top of the brain. Big West would start their back-to-back games the weekend right after Christmas, or December 27th and the 28th, and you would be able to have non-conference games from November 25th up until that point, but then when they get into season, there would be one bye week built in, but even if a game had to be canceled or postponed, they wouldn't reschedule it because of COVID.
All right, let's welcome in Brady Quinn. Of course, you can see on the Big Noon Kickoff as we're getting ready to watch Big Ten football, Nebraska and Ohio State. Brady, let's start with last weekend. Your thoughts on Alabama, Georgia, now that we've had a chance to catch our breath.
Well, my initial thoughts are like, look, this is one of two things that's happening at Alabama. Either we're just full on seeing the transition of just college offenses having a hard time adapting to these explosive offenses. It's either that, and maybe we're just going to see Alabama struggle to play good defense the rest of the year, or it's just early in the season, and everyone's still kind of working out the kinks on that side of the ball, and there really is no home field advantage, you know, because most stadiums aren't able to be at full capacity. But I also think the other side of that conversation, though, is Georgia's a good football team. I think they'll continue to get better as the year goes on, right? I mean, Stetson Bennett wasn't the starter to begin the season. It's always tough when you have these quarterback battles. You know, like the Big Ten starting up this week. There's a number of teams that have like a four-way quarterback battle going into the season. And I'm thinking to myself, like, how the hell do you get any guy prepared to be the starter if you've got four or three guys competing for it? So I think Bennett and this offense for Georgia will continue to get better. And as for Alabama, it's really focusing on that defense and how they can kind of improve. Because I don't think they're as talented as they've been in years past.
Brady Quinn joining us in the Doug Gottlieb Show on Fox Sports Radio. Notre Dame's look good. They weren't great last weekend, obviously. And they're ranked inside the top five. You know how it works with Notre Dame. Everyone's in denial of how good or how talented. Chase Claypool can go and dominate with the Pittsburgh Steelers, but people will think that Notre Dame doesn't have dudes. Obviously, the offensive line has produced guy after guy after guy. What's your sense of the Irish now about the quarter pole of the season?
Well, let's not forget, you know, they lost Claypool, who was the leading wide receiver last year. They lost Cole Kmet, who was the best tight end last year. So, they're a team that's still in transition, too. And I think part of that, you know, offense, that chemistry was obviously impacted by COVID. And if you're looking at this group this year, you know, last week they made a concentrated effort at trying to get Javon McKinley the football, kind of him being that player where when isolated, they like to take one-on-one opportunities. Didn't work out. You know, that's still a work in progress. Bryant's another player to keep an eye on, number four for Notre Dame. I think as, you know, he continues to get more comfortable in the offense, he might emerge as that big play receiver, as well as Braden Lindsay. But the tight end's going to be Michael Mayer. That kid is a freak. And, he might not be up there along with the Kyle Pitts or Brevin Jordan, looking at Miami's tight end and Florida's tight end, but he will be there at some point. I mean, he'll be the next great one. And so, I think they're still a work in progress. They're going to have to get it going, though, this week because Pitt's a good defensive team. Their offensive line will be challenged. This is the best team at rushing the passer in the country, talking about Pitt. So I don't think they're just going to be able to run the football. I think they're going to have to be able to throw the football effectively versus one of the better defenses in the ACC.
You know, I talked about this with Joel Klatt earlier in the week. And, you know, people forget when Deshaun Watson, his last year at Clemson in the regular season, he tried to show everybody how he could throw from the pocket. And it led to kind of an up and down final season where he threw a lot of interceptions. Then they got to the college football playoff and he got back to being old Deshaun Watson. We ran it, he threw it, he did a little bit of everything, and they won the championship. I look at Ohio State, and you have a quarterback who's come back in Justin Fields, and he's got a chance to be, if not the number one, maybe the number two pick in the draft. Do you think he plays in a way in which he tries to prove to people that he's more than a running quarterback, that he can be more of a pocket quarterback?
Well, the interesting thing is watching him last year, they were so concerned about him getting hurt that they really didn't run him much early on. Like when he took off, it was a pass play and the Red Sea parted, or it was sprinkling in as they got more comfortable towards the end of the season or kind of needed to at times. So I actually think that's something that they may feel more comfortable now doing this year, just because they got a little bit more experience and some of the backups behind them. But I mean, that was more of a product of that last year. And I think as the season went on, he just got better and better as a pocket passer. So I don't really have many concerns or, you know, worries about him needing to prove himself as that. And that's in part because if you look at the Ohio State kind of lineage too, Dwayne Haskins, for example, was a first-round pick, largely a pocket passer. I mean, it's not like they haven't produced those sorts of products. So I don't know that people are looking at Justin Fields and saying, you know, he needs to show he can play from the pocket. I think actually the exact opposite now, especially look at the NFL, most of these NFL teams are saying, like, yeah, we need a guy who's mobile, a guy who can break tackles and play outside the pocket, because it's getting harder and harder to protect these guys on a consistent basis. And we can actually make guys better, quote-unquote, pocket passers with different things we do to scheme things up and to help give them easy completions. So I don't really see that as a big concern for Justin Fields this year.
Doug Gottlieb Show here on Fox Sports Radio. That's the voice of Brady Quinn. What are we going to see from Nebraska? You know, they had you talk about a quarterback battle. Adrian Martinez is going to get the start, but they might have a two-headed monster there. Change coordinators. You know, they've gotten off to slow starts, and they have this ridiculous back-to-back Ohio State, Penn State to start the season. What do you think we see from the Big Red to start the year?
That's the biggest question mark, and I'm really not sure what to expect. I mean, going into this game, one of the things we kind of talk about preparing, you know, for this game, for our big new kickoff show is, you know, what do you want to talk about? I'm like, you know, I kind of have some questions about Ohio State, but really, to me, this game is more about, like, what is Nebraska? Like, are they going to be able to get back to a team that I think 2 years ago we looked at when Scott Frost had first gotten there, and we kind of said, all right, there's a lot of promise or hope with this program, the return of the prodigal son, and they've done nothing but kind of go backwards. Adrian Martinez didn't continue to develop the way we thought he would, really forcing the football at times, making some really bad decisions, and defensively they only got worse. So, you know, they made a change there, and I think that's going to be the challenge is – it could look really, really ugly, and it's a little unfair to Nebraska because, A, it's, you know, the first game in an unprecedented year, but also you're taking on arguably one of the best teams in the country, in my opinion. They're probably a top three team next to Alabama and Clemson, and so I'm not sure that's a fair evaluation, but, man, you know, it is interesting, though, like this matchup, Doug. These two teams were, like, the two that pushed the most to bring Big Ten football back, and so I do kind of find it ironic that they, like, scheduled them to play the first week of this whole thing. And there could really be a stark contrast between how both these teams look.
No question about it. How safe is Tom Herman, you think?
That's a great question. There's a lot of football left to be played. Here's what they have going for them right now is they could still technically make it to the Big 12, right? They've got to play Iowa State later on, which Iowa State's kind of the leader in the clubhouse right now in the Big 12. Like, they dropped the game to begin the season, technically a non-conference play, but they've been undefeated so far in conference play. So if they can beat Iowa State, you know, they're going to have the edge over them, and then you just kind of have to see, you know, what the rest of
the season. Oklahoma State as well. They had to play on the road.
And Oklahoma State, yeah. and then they've got to obviously, you know, beat them, run the table with them, but there's still an outside shot they could win the Big 12. That would go a long way, I think, in changing the perception, but, I mean, they've got to figure out a way of playing better defense at this point. You know, they made all those wholesale changes, and if Chris Ash doesn't stir things up, you know, at some point though, you got to hold Tom Herman accountable. And I just, their offense.
It's like everybody thinks they should, but it's like look, Texas Tech should have beaten them. They didn't. TCU. It's not like this is a great TCU squad. Does beat them. You got Oklahoma. Again, not a great Oklahoma team. And I get that name wise. Look, Oklahoma State. If they get Spencer Sanders back, like that, that's a team that could, that should very well be favored over you, especially you're playing at home. And then, you know, there's no walks in the park, really, outside of the Kansas game.
When you lose the TCU, yeah. I mean, no game.
And they should have lost the Tech. They should have lost the Tech.
So that's the tough part is it all depends on how they finish out and if they can get to the Big 12 championship game and win it, that I will kind of forget some of these early blips. But, I mean, the question, whether it's not Tom Herman, it's like the Big 12 right now. I think they are already setting themselves up to be kind of the forgotten conference. And we haven't even started Big Ten or Pac-12 play so far. And I think we you know, are almost opening the door for the potential chance of the SEC getting two in automatically just because of how far, you know, how bad the Big 12 looks so far.
Yeah. I mean, that first weekend was an abject disaster, regardless of, you know, if you're playing with backups or how many suspended guys you have because of COVID or whatever. It's crazy. What about the Pac-12? Like, we're still waiting. They haven't played. It's long enough to wait for the Big Ten. Do we consider them players in this whole discussion?
Out of respect to the conference and the players, coaches involved, yeah, we can say that. I really don't know, given the late start, the amount of games they're playing, and who knows if they can even finish out. You know, the Big Ten, the Pac-12, the way they set this whole thing up, there's really no room for, you know, air or postponements, right? And so I honestly don't really think they are. Maybe if they have an undefeated team and things go haywire in the SEC or ACC or even the Big Ten with, you know, COVID and how some of these teams end up playing out. But if they get an undefeated Oregon, maybe an undefeated USC, who knows how it's going to pan out. But that would be the only scenario in which I think they would have even a shot. But right now, I just think the perception of the Pac-12, and this really started to me with the very first college football playoff season when they took on Ohio State, and Ohio State absolutely just, you know, brutalized them and beat them up on both sides of the ball. Like, I don't know that they ever really overcame that and that perception in the entire college football world. Like, they don't have the ability to compete up front on the line of scrimmage on either side of the ball. And, you know, you're not seeing, you know, that huge, you know, rush of NFL talent coming out of the Pac-12 anymore. They're having a little bit harder time recruiting with the exception of your Oregon. So right now it's all perception right now, I think, with the College Football Playoff Committee and with the Pac-12 starting as late as they are, they're already starting behind the eight ball, in my opinion, even if there was a team that you know, goes undefeated.
Let me ask you about the NFL. Brady Quinn joining us. You know, I see him Big Noon Kickoff. Also listen to him on Fox Sports Radio on the weekends with Jonas Knox. They are not related. It only feels like they're brothers. I want to ask you about Tua. Kind of weird, right? Like, we knew Fitz was eventually going to be sent to the bench, but he actually played well. Granted, it's the Jets. The bye week, Fitz seemed surprised by it. They choose to go with Tua this early into a season where they could make the playoffs. What's your reaction?
Well, first off, now that we hear more about how it was handled, I'm not a fan of that. I mean, it's 2020, man. Like, the fact that they made this decision in a room and someone went out and leaked it to the media, and Brian Flores isn't talking to Fitz directly on the phone right after that meeting, it's disrespectful considering what he's done so far to help, you know, give them a chance to not only win football games, but just be the good leader, the good veteran in the locker room, and help bring this culture along. So I hate to hear that. I think the interesting thing about all this is we kept hearing, like, this is about Tua and when he's ready. When is he ready? I don't see that being the case. I actually see this being about the team and when the team around him was ready. And I think they are looking at the fact that, all right, our schedule got jacked up because of COVID. We now have a bye. We have 2 weeks to prepare for the Rams. Why not go ahead and just give him those 2 weeks to prepare? Our offensive line has greatly improved. We've got these receivers in Parker, who's become our number one guy consistently. Preston Williams is a 50-50 ball red zone target. All their tight ends have pitched in between Gesicki, Durham Smythe, and Adam Shaheen. And then Ford's their slot guy, and Jakeem Grant's their gadget guy. So they all have their roles, and they're playing better on that side of the ball. And defensively, they're starting to become opportunistic. So why not then insert him at a time in which you're 500, you feel like your team's in a good spot, you know, see if he can maybe take you even further, but at least – get some of that experience to really prepare for being a more true contender in 2021. I think that's more of the logic behind it.
If you were the Jets and you got a chance at Trevor Lawrence, would you move off of Sam Darnold?
The tough part about answering that question is, you know, I don't know who the head coach is, who the general manager is, the way this whole thing is moving. I mean, you know, look, Joe Douglas has no ties to Sam Darnold, right? He just got there this year. So technically, you know, if you wanted to, you could easily make that excuse, trade him, get whatever you can for him, and then draft Trevor Lawrence. If Adam Gase is there, you kind of wonder if he would make the same decision. But, you know, he took this job when Sam Darnold was the quarterback, so you have to anticipate that he was thinking, like, this is part of the plan of helping to improve him. So that's kind of one conversation. Like, I need to know where the Jets are first before we can really answer that. But I will say this about Trevor Lawrence is whoever's number one, I mean, and I got to be honest, there's not too many teams right now outside of, like, Seattle, which they're not going to be number one. Kansas City's not going to be number one. Baltimore's not going to be number one. I mean, there's only a handful of teams that I think if you had that number one pick that wouldn't or trade out of it not take Trevor Lawrence. I mean, he is the best prospect that I've seen in my lifetime. And so, yeah, you could easily see a scenario where the New York Jets end up moving on from Darnold and draft him number one overall if they're in that spot. But I can tell you this much. I feel like the Jacksonville Jaguars right now, that might be the biggest Jet fan base you've ever seen because they're hoping they win one or two games so that they can have that spot and they can take Trevor Lawrence.
Awesome stuff. That's the voice of Brady Quinn. You hear him weekends on Fox Sports Radio. And, of course, you see him on Big Noon Kickoff getting ready for Nebraska, traveling to Ohio State. First Big Ten game of the year. Of course, you can see it on Fox this Saturday. Brady, thanks so much for joining us.
Doug, always a pleasure, man. Have a great day.
Dude, pleasure's all mine. By the way, there's a Friday night Big Ten game. I want to make sure I kind of correct my – it's the first Saturday Big Ten – whatever. You get it. I think you get it. Don't you get it? Yeah, you get it. All right, got some good. Michael Jordan, the player, Michael Jordan, the owner, Michael Jordan, the coach, will explain.
Fox Sports Radio has the best sports talk lineup in the nation. Catch all of our shows at foxsportsradio.com. And within the iHeartRadio app, search FSR to listen live.
Let's get to the press.
The press.
Byer.
Dan Byer, what do you got?
Doug, we start in the National Football League. ESPN reporting that the Seahawks are interested in signing wide receiver Antonio Brown. The Seahawks would be one of a few teams interested in Brown once his suspension ends after week 8 of the NFL season.
You are a Seahawk fan and you are against them picking him up, right?
Yes, I am. I am.
Just you don't want to upsetting the apple cart?
Well, they've signed Josh Gordon, as I mentioned earlier. They're still waiting for him to be reinstated. Russell Wilson's been magnificent. To your point, I don't know why you would throw Antonio Brown now into the mix when the passing game seems to be, you know, the best part of what they're doing this season.
I mean, because he's good?
Sure. But how much of the growth are you getting as opposed to maybe possible chemistry problems?
I get it, but apparently there's chemistry between he and Russell Wilson having worked together.
Sure.
You know? So worked out together. Not where he worked together, worked out together. Which I'm sure is a plant from his agent, whatever. And Pete has dealt with difficult guys in the past. That's an interesting one. Where else would you see him going? Who is in dire need? You know, you would think Antonio Brown wants to go to a competitive for a team that can play.
Yeah, Buccaneers have been ruled out. I think you have to have a quarterback that Brown would respect enough, like he did in New England with Brady, for that game that he played. I think the options, you know, New Orleans, I mean, you know, that could be a spot. Michael Thomas's situation, by the way, with the Saints.
But they already have an issue with Michael Thomas.
Yeah, I know.
Why do we need another problem?
By the way, there's going to be a separate story. Sean Payton said the punishment for punching a teammate over, but wasn't clear if Thomas was going to be able to play in Week 7 against Carolina. Members of the media who saw the open portion of practice saw Thomas on the field and then saw him leave and didn't see him for the rest of practice. So not sure necessarily what's going on with Michael Thomas in New Orleans.
Okay.
The news that I just told you a little while ago, Pat Chambers stepping down as the head coach at Penn State after 9 seasons, now being revealed there was an internal investigation into the topics, I believe, that we talked about, Doug. So that could be the reason why Chambers stepped down.
So Rasir Bolton is the former point guard. He started as a freshman. And apparently there's a comment made about, I don't want you to play like there's a noose around your neck or whatever. And Rasir took it to being racially in charge and insensitive. You know, it feels like a misinterpretation because it was, again, and this is when you read things, the idea was, I want you to play free. I just don't know why you wouldn't play. Like, this is not that hard, guys. It's not that hard. Like, I want you to play free. I don't want you to play like, yeah, we used to call it one eye. Can't play one eye on the bench. I need you to play free. Have fun. Understand what we want you to do. Like, No racially charged commentary. No commentary about somebody's parents or their sexual orientation. Like, this ain't that hard. We act like this is an old school versus new school. Like, no, it's not. It's just common sense school. And I like Pat. A little culty the way he coached and the way it was some of the things they did. And they saw, you know, they won over 60 games the last 3 years. And for if you've ever been to Penn State, that's nothing short of outstanding. But still, the timing tells you that this was, that whatever they investigated, it uncovered some bad stuff.
Michael Jordan spoke with Cigar Aficionado and said, quote, "I have no patience for coaching. For me to ask an individual to focus on the game the way I play the game in some ways would be unfair for that kid that would have to endure that." Michael Jordan saying, yeah, for all he's done, he could never be a coach.
Yeah, there's no way. I mean, of the great players, I think Larry Bird's been the only one who's a really good coach, right?
Yeah.
And Larry Bird, as good a coach he was, he hired an offensive and defensive coordinator, right? He hired Rick Carlisle and Johnny Bock and Dick Carter. Those were his, that's actually a guy's name, just so you know, I'm not making it up. He's a very well-respected coach.
Yeah, and it's with a T, right?
Harter, yes.
Yes, Harter.
Dick Harter.
Stan Van Gundy will be the new head coach of the New Orleans Pelicans, getting a 4-year
what?
Deal.
What? Ramos, that's his name, Dick Harter. Right? Do you know what Sam Darnold's grandpa's name is? Was?
No. What is it?
You don't remember? His grandpa was one of the
Arnold?
Original, original Marlboro man.
Oh, I didn't. Arnold Darnold would have been great. That.
No. Dick Hammer.
Dick Hammer.
That's, yes. That's. Dick Hammer was like this freak athlete, and he became the Marlboro man. That is Sam Darnold's grandpa. Hey, get out there and press.
That was the press.
I mean, think about it, though.
John ends it.
First day of school, right, when they start by your last name first and your first name last.
Oh.
There was a little delay there, and there's not a delay on radio. John's like, wait. Oh. Baseball tonight, I think we're going to have a show. I think it's going to be 1-1 at the end tonight. It's Doug Gottlieb Show, Fox Sports Radio.